Thank you, Timothy. That word flinging was quite appropriate. Maybe I'm still flinging around in your terminology. I was both moved and intimidated in a way by your presentation, because if I can continue on the personal note, in those 60s, Kitai was my tutor, subsequently became a kind of guru figure, very much helped by Timothy in the dialogue, and by strange kind of coincidence, the other two artists, John Davis and Ken Kiff, are not only friends, but responded to my invitation to come and work in the artist workshop that I organize in Kasauli. And in a way, there is a kind of family resemblance. I wish Timothy had actually put some of his own work to complete, in a sense, the Four Musketeers, but which would have made me feel a little more at ease in my presentation, because I am really going to talk about my own work, and set against this very moving and powerful imagery and argument, I do, I must confess, feel intimidated. I do also feel a bit, I suppose, like either having left the family or, in other terminology, a renegade to the cause. But I hope finally that this kind of divide, not the great divide of Andres Husen, who's here, but maybe the divide isn't that great. And as some questions have already been posed, this postmodern aspect is what we're going to discuss. I'll read a short bit and then go on with my slides. I might just also cross over my half by a few minutes, not certainly anywhere near as long as Timothy. My own work since the beginning of the 90s has been engaged in dismantling the frame of easel painting, including into the fictive space other frames of reference, even physical materials overlaid on pictorial projections. I have moved into the area of constructing three-dimensional objects which on their surface include rather than exclude images and mark making, and then into the area of installation. Since my art practice overlaps with some of the issues raised in the seminar note, I shall take the liberty to speak with examples of my own work, which I'll take up in the latter half of my presentation. The title of my talk is The Artwork Project. The Artwork Project proposes individual art creations are given a framework where personal perceptions about a wide range of issues can be circulated and objectified in terms of a project. The Artwork Project proposes a nature of art-making practice in a total sense, where I, the artist, express myself through the art object, as well as intervene in the social, political, and cultural arena through various creative and curatorial manifestations. I'm here referring to a social, political, cultural organization called Sehmat the Safdar Hashmi Trust, which for the last 6 years has been in the forefront in fighting fundamentalism, Hindu fundamentalism. And I have curated a number of projects called Words and Images, and more recently, Gandhi Postcards. And in a way, I shall bring this aspect of the curatorial in my work, and rather than seeing it as something in some other space, maybe as the total space or the total kind of artist I'm projecting, I would like to include it in that framework. In search of a self in all its complex states, my practice has led me to follow a non-linear, non-sequential mode of artistic practice. The nature of the artwork has enlarged its scope through strategies which locate the self at many points in a field and under many guises. In developing an idea or a theme, I have often introduced the notion of break and rupture, an aesthetics of caesura as so as to constantly put to question the making of a homogeneous image. A thematic series is usually followed by a subject very different in appearance and medium. For example, the use of acrylic paint for a series about fire and death, then soft pastels for journeys quoting 19th century travel photographs, to charcoal for war and concentration camps, and then to the Gulf War using used engine oil. And more recently, and that exhibition is going on here, enlargements from a newspaper photograph about communal strife. There is also the deprivileging of the autonomy of the individual work seen in isolation. The picture can be seen as a unit in relation to other parts, in which there is a sort of frame-by-frame relay from one to the other. In the transference, there is a constant shift of meanings. As I said earlier, I am partisan to the position of the frame opening to include rather than to exclude, the flatbed picture plane receiving a range of information and materials. If the artist does not follow the straight path of her known style, then what course do they follow? The new old mole does the burrowing in a field, signposting her creative actions across an ever-expanding terrain. The dialectic of underground and above the ground practice has for the moment lost some of its earlier efficacy. Now artists cross borders with ease, have greater ability to swim in different waters and be in many places. The field has differentiated from the directional road becomes the site for the artwork project. This field can be described as the nation, the community, the home, the place to be personal. The field as nation is the site for collective action against fundamentalist forces. The field also has sites as particular places from which the artwork is generated both thematically and structurally. From this context, be it a city, a place, a building, the artwork can be created. The space of the studio where one makes the work and the exhibition location overlap. The opening out for the art object to receive a range of seemingly inconsistent inputs enlarges the scope of its receptive attributes. The project can be grand and even take the risk of moving towards being a spectacle. Or, on the other hand, it uses a range of materials, even a poverty of means, to communicate various kinds of experiences. Another problem I would like to raise is, what is the nature of authorship when the art object has located into its format not just art quotations, but skills and images made by other professionals and creative persons? And when these works are made through collective and collaborative participation and acknowledged, but are presented as one artist's work. Can one say this is a form of curatorial practice by the artist for the artist? Is such a strategy part of redefining the author of the work? And maybe I bring up the word of appropriation and as a question, and whether all forms of appropriation are exploitative, or are there other ways of defining it? This is put as a question. Continuing the discussion of the interface between painting and sculpture, I'm here referring in particular to surfaces which receive painterly marks or other graphic notations on three-dimensional objects, as well as on the wall, which are seen as an active relay in the total space of the room. The installation of a multiplicity of objects into a space recognizes the specificities and concreteness of the architecture and then proceeds to work out a relation of placement and displacement where background is an active presence in relation to the objects. Since the visual experience takes into account the phenomenology of the space, the body of the viewer negotiates the sculpture, which often are walked on or over, here reduced to the two-dimensional, or through or under when they become large three-dimensional objects. Their deliberate change of scale and placement is part of the intentionality of the deprivileged act of looking. To the body, now to the body in movement, encountering material and volume. Since the optical gaze towards the object is not the central concern, the eye, body, and mind play surprise moves on each other. Those familiar with minimalist art will recognize a connection, and as my slides will further demonstrate, this is only one side of the coin, a tactical move to prize open a 60s formalism and reintroduce the world back into the real. That was what was referred to as minimalist art. It called the object the real, that it wasn't standing in for the real. The overall strategy is to present the historical, topical, or the personal in a dialectical relationship with the object, to create a structure which does not separate the human from the abstract. The poetics of space have their maximal potential in such aesthetic encounters. Picasso spoke about his interest in Cézanne's anxiety. Here, there is anxiety at another level, because the installation artwork exists while the viewer is there, and like theatre, when the show is over, the structure is demolished. The site-specific installation exists on the edge, surviving for the moment. When the exhibition is over, there is a form of death, but there is memory. There is also a visual document and or a musical score waiting for a conductor, curator, as Sarkis, the contemporary French artist, has said, to bring back from silence or the museum store the re-representation of this vulnerable form. I start with works from an exhibition called Collaboration Combine. Drawings appear on paper. They are done with engine oil and blowtorch, which I had already done in a series earlier on. The single unit is removed from the frame, and the act of adhering to the support is done in an informal manner, either just on hooks or stitched on paper and then put on the support which makes the tent. The work on the right-hand side was part of a collective drawing project that I did with students in Baroda, and here is an example of relating and using other people's work to make my own work. I came into the area of the three-dimensional without any experience in being a sculptor, having painted for 25 years, and recognized that I must start with the basic skill, the act of at the level of what children do, simply of folding the paper to make a three-dimensional object, and exploring the idea that one can use any material, a poverty of means, to make three-dimensional sculpture. These are two 7-foot stone-high columns, and I plunged myself fully into monumental stone sculpture. Here again, using the skills of stone cutters. And taking the imaging that this is some kind of a find, that I have dug it as an archaeological find, opposed the monumentality, the weight of the stone and its gravity and its grand association by countering a side of it with materials that are contemporary, like plastic, but also of adhering to that surface in informality, a kind of casualness of the picture postcard, which is fixed to the plastic, a kind of form of participation where artist friends send me postcards of their favorite artwork, and they are mirrored in the work. On the other side, the stone column enclosing the gaze has photographs by photographer friends that I have enclosed in the column. And this was, in fact, a question put to be my Canadian critic in Mysore, that could I consider this a form of curatorial practice? And I hadn't at that point considered it, but I am putting it to you in a way. The other aspect is of how I continue to privilege the surface, and that in fact use the surface as a means of making marks, introducing imagery and references. And so therefore the object is treated as a series of surfaces in which I am able to enter and make my statements apart from the form itself. Two more works called Axis Mundi and Baghdad Illusions. And here, again, the relationship of the material which are placed against or just resting upon, and that through them, each of them provides a kind of screen or a filter in various level, where at various levels, different kinds of information are printed using silk screen as a device, where you have a history of Indian architectural civilization, right from Mohenjo-Daro to contemporary architecture, involving an architect who participated in the making of the work. And so the relationship of information and material, of history through the physicality and the concreteness of the object. And in Baghdad Illusions, using a 19th century Orientalist view, which is placed on the box as glass, as reverse painting, and then reflected in the mirror that repeated as photograph, color, and black and white Xerox. So that the single image is constantly being re-presented and renegotiated and questioned. The site of the exhibition collaboration combined, where on the right hand you still have my relationship to painting, to being the figurative narrative painter that I was, but already the work against the wall in the foreground is about a sculptor who committed suicide. And here the support is wood, so in a sense it's already been brought down from the wall to the floor and started, has sort of acquired the dimension of an object. The fact that it's wood receives other materials like iron rods and other objects. As you went through to the end of the exhibition, and here these are the beginnings of a possible ground plan, which suggests later on in moving to use the total space as the installation form suggests. The mood, as you can see, completely changes from one end, being free and expressionist and quite wild and chaotic, to a certain sense of order and of silence. What I mentioned earlier on about a place or a context generating the work of art. I was invited to an international residency in the northeast of England. The project was called Riverscape on the River Tees, and Japanese, Polish, English, and myself, we spent 6 months there. The aspect of the map had already appeared in the series of work which I mentioned about the Gulf War, so that there was a shifting of framing, a view of the world through a window, to using the device of the map. And so the map does not have a strict border or boundary. It also helped me to work a relationship with the wall, so that there is the drawing that is fixed to the wall, but it is also drawing on the wall. The negative, in fact, becomes part of it. The slippage also from the wall to the floor, and the high relief aspect of the work, playing a tension between flat and drawing, and that finally, in fact, the drawing is on a flat piece of paper, but only that the paper is folded. The top to bottom flow of the river is a device often used in Indian miniatures, where you get this flow not horizontally across, but from top to bottom, and that the pictorial, as it moves using the paper, so the same paper as its support, becomes then not only a surface on the ground, but then the same paper also becomes object. And so this back and forth between flatness and object and the reading one of the other. I continue the map view, where again there is no single point of view for you to look at the picture, and the work on the right is titled Draw to Bridge, and I'm sort of slightly punning on the project's intention. It's well known as an international drawing biennale, Cleveland Biennale, where the act of drawing is to bridge people together. The town, also being an industrial town, was famous for its development of iron, and it has these quite fantastic bridges across the River Tees. And so the weight that the paper acquires, almost that it kind of dematerializes itself to become almost as strong as metal, and that the iron, in fact, is linear and becomes a line on the wall. And if there was a better photograph, the shadow actually is stronger than the iron rod. The two old boats and a plan for an oil rig are working across the materials of the old and the new, the plastic, and in fact, it's now a famous center for offshore oil rigs. And so I use a sort of Leger-like drawing for the rig structure, and free myself from a kind of one point of view, and start in a very basic way using the space, the corner of the room. The other side of the tree is a tree trunk cut into half, and I'm working, which is what such places kind of foreground as the problem, the ecological problem. And in fact, industry is seen as something historical of the past, and we have to now clean the rivers and the polluted environment. So I'm again using the physical three-dimensional object, but my obsession to keep the picture frame, returning it in surprise moves by sandwiching brake grease, which you in fact see on the floor, collected like as you might collect resin from a tree, but it forms a golden kind of metaphoric tree from this side. And if you see from the other, the iron chimney, the iron form, cylindrical form on the other side, you can read it as you see in the sky in Middlesbrough, the sky full of sulfur smoke. One kind of industrial violence, if that's a way of putting it, or that's how it is perceived, to home ground, to, in fact, this city's ground, this city's street, which experienced the most terrifying communal violence and riot after the demolition of the Babri Masjid Mosque. A deeply tragic moment in the history of our country, and even more tragic for those people who were born and brought up in a modern secular India, to see that the state allowed what it allowed to happen: the demolition of the mosque, the murdering and killing of hundreds and thousands of innocent people, mostly Muslims. It's very difficult it was very difficult for me to think how could I, in a sense, represent this experience, and particularly since in some way that personal expression seemed to be too limited. And so I had to go out into some neutral space. The newspaper photograph provided an indicator, and if I can tell you or inform you that this show is on at the moment in Bombay. It's taken 2 years to come, because somehow I was insistent that it should be shown in a non-gallery space. So it's now being shown in an industrial warehouse photographed by Hoshi Jal, Times of India photographer, already emblematic in itself, the photograph with this strange object. And I started the attack on it, as it were, by being violent in the sense of piercing this fragile material, the fragile image, the vulnerable man, but hoped, and I'm not going to show you very many more because they're there in the exhibition to see, that I hoped if a series of strategies which where the nail would start actually working counter images of a grid of protective screens and the aspect of enlargement, which is a natural attribute to the photograph, enlarges here to almost life size, and it gets a support of this modernist, minimalist kind of sculpture. And this is something that I'll be bringing back again, because it relates to my own beginnings of becoming an artist, particularly in London in the 60s. And as has already been stated, I was on the pop side, but the other face of the coin was minimalism, a kind of Anthony Caro sort of sculpture, and referring to those elements, but in some sense giving a new kind of referentiality to the image. The central piece is the mausoleum, and there is this inlay work by a traditional Muslim craftsman from Agra, now living in Delhi. And I felt that a kind of abstraction was very necessary to counter the weight and the gravity of the image of the, in a sense, what I had acted upon the photograph. And just a quick aside, when I say acted upon the photograph, that there was now the presence of the hand. As the expressive signature had, in a sense, been evacuated, I was still keeping this presence of the hand. And since Goldsmith was mentioned, one of its very fine theoreticians and teachers there, Sarath Maharaj, on seeing this work in London, got very interested in the fact that how the presence of the hand was still there to in a sense leave its mark. That if I had critiqued signature, but I hadn't become, you know, in that reference of what Goldsmith and producing an art which has no human activity, no activity of labor present. It's mechanically produced. I hope through this abstraction to be able to actually give a sense of countering the kind of realism a la sort of Siegel, a live cast of the figure, which in a sense is already being distanced by the introduction of the neon lights. And I'll show you just a full view of it. And the referring to this kind of metaphysical abstraction was a desire to kind of give a lift to the whole exhibition. And it's always very gratifying when a viewer most imaginatively transforms it. And so the artist, and she's here, Jansuk, came and spent a long time looking at it, and she said that there was a circle around this mausoleum. There was a kind of halo of light, and she said, I just kept feeling that I'm kind of being lifted. And so, in a sense, the use of the diagonal on the structure, referring on one hand to a pictorial tradition, and that diagonal gets a kind of metaphysical lift, and it's communicated by a viewer, one feels that the real and the material concretized are able to be, in a sense, like you can transport yourself into the kind of imaginary, metaphysical, fictive spaces, which in a sense are being suggested that it is not possible in this kind of work. The minimalism tactic of using the found object, the thing, the box, the element itself, being the reality, is in a sense upturned both by the fact that it's coming back to a referentiality of the gateway, of the top of the tin trunk being read as a coffin, and as you come round on the other side, this whole thing of what's on the verso, the other view, counters the or denies the kind of homogeneity of the object. And here there is that pop minimalist kind of interface represented both by the graffiti as well as by the signs Fallen Mortal. In both cases, I think that there is a critiquing of the of subjectivity of that kind of abstract expressionist existentialism, which was being critiqued by both pop and minimalism in their own way. And I think that I'm in some way positioning myself and in the way that I question both notions of that kind of subjective presence and of authorship. A shift to, and yet a continuity in terms of using the cube. The cube is also was a form that was greatly used by the minimalists, but inscribing onto the surface of the cube. And so here is evident that I'm using each surface in a sense as something which is like painted or pictorial, and it's literal. There's an actual window which is embedded on one side of the wall. Then you get the aspect of the grid. It's an iron grid that was pressed into the paper. The color is from the rust. It's pulled off, and so the grid and the map form another reference. And as you go around, you get an image, and clearly, to most Indian viewers, there would be the association that it is a historical monument. Its basic form looks like a mosque. It's been attacked. The thick handmade paper made of rag content in the Gandhi Ashram, I in fact made it there in the factory, is able to receive physical materials, objects, cycle tires, things that counter the kind of softness of the paper, and an iron cross, which is something that, well, as if you cannot cross over. The entering into the sculpture, into the object, the reference in a kind of imaginative way of how so much of the destruction of homes after communal strife, whether they are small jogi jopris or shops, that a black hole is left both in terms of memory and in space, and then exploited by real estate people. That here, in fact, it becomes like a kind of small chapel. It happened in the gallery I knew had a skylight above, and so I had designed and positioned this where you get the light filling this whole space. So it, in fact, is a place of congregation. In the bowl of water there, as you come near it, are images of flames and fire, and that is by using a video monitor placed inside the box. So you get the material and the kind of visual in an interactive manner. The boat at the end, the boat is not for departure, because that was in a sense the intention of the forces which are ruling the state at the moment. That all the Muslims must leave or be thrown into the sea. That in fact the boat is a form, is a container. It is not going to leave. It is going to remain on the shore. It's lifted up by railway sleepers. And here again, I'm playing off that aspect which I mentioned of the sculpture becoming two-dimensional. And many of you will recognize how Carl Andre has been returned. Carl Andre being the American minimalist sculptor, being returned, you know, to an object, a playful use of look of the gaze of rather than looking out, of looking in, and that in the two monitors, a 4-minute sequence on top of a woman doing her hair with from traditional to playful references of fans and other objects from China, Japan, from all over the world, but countered by a face that remains frontal and framed exactly the same way throughout the 4-minute sequence, a Kathakali dancer who also is a modern theatre person and dancer. And so, in a sense, she answers back to the viewer any attempt of a kind of desire that the kind of erotics of doing the hair might have. The object, again, inscribed and pressed into the paper as in a sense as something to do with something that was there, a memory, and the image, of course, of the shovel is so deeply embedded and emblematically present in an image of labor, but the positive of it is in this, again, minimalist box stroke coffin as it is placed below, and the blood flows a bit like a red flag which isn't really still formed, and so it is referring to a certain era, a death of labor. I move to a very recent work. Unfortunately, I do not have slides of the installation, but the show will come to Bombay next month. And again, a show which was generated from a specific context. I was invited to show in Budapest, and I said, well, maybe there I can take the risk to deal with my own personal history, to open my family album, and to represent this personal aspect. The personal is further has meaning in that context of Budapest, because my grandmother was Hungarian. My aunt wrote these letters, as Amrita Shergill, to her mother in Hungarian. So I have I'm using two basic elements of the archive. One are the letters of Amrita Shergill, which are photographed and xeroxed and enlarged, so that the personal intimate, in fact, covers a wall 30 feet big, and the enlargements are of the original letter by the process of xeroxing become four times the original size. And so it gets distanced, it gets like a kind of wall newspaper to be scanned. The personal intimate finds that form of displacement. I use photographs of Umrao Singh Shergill. He took photographs of himself, a series of self-portraits from 1892 to 1947. So almost over 56 years, this man was photographing himself. He was very handsome, narcissistic. He, in fact, as photography states, that one of its aspects was to, in fact, bring the aspect of the individual and subjectivity as the photographer posed either himself or herself and the other. And his relationship to his daughter, who under the gaze of the father is called self-portrait, a portrait of daughter, how each, in fact, over this period of time, in the way I've got them running as two parallel tracks, and I'm in a sense picking up a line from a very fine piece I read by Wallen, where he critiques Roland Barthes on Barthes' sort of rejection of bringing in the narrative into the photograph. And so actually I'm narrativizing a series of photographs into a time span horizontally across and a relationship of father to daughter. I'm sorry that I don't have breakfast, I should mention it. And just four boxes, which I do have slides of boxes, which are again devices as containers, but where the overlap between the personal and the fact that it is an object, a box with its own objecthood. The boxes, in fact, are kept closed. The viewer comes and opens them. The family album, photographs, new prints are sandwiched between plastic. They float in water in this case, and that's called the title Mother, where the portrait of the Hungarian woman in an Orientalist manner, and then as an older woman, the the introduction to the box of reference to violence, she committed suicide. So the fan, the Orientalist part on one side, and the objects countering that. This is father. The father, Umrao Singh, was kind of modeled himself on Tolstoy. So I use the material and a notebook where he was a sort of dilettante scholar, so writing in Sanskrit and Urdu. And here the sister's box, where photographs are hand tinted, and then I photograph them as collages, make them as translites. So each of these containers become reference to distancing the kind of subjective into the structure. The thing that I also want to bring up of how in today's times, and sort of mentioned by Timothy in a sense, of the curatorial project of curators suggesting themes to artists, and where does one the place of one's vision or one's subjectivity, how is it located? If do you reject somebody else's proposal to do a work? This work is called The Table Is Laid. That's the title given by the curators. The site is Erfurt in Germany, where the curators invited seven artists from seven different countries. Each of them was asked to do a 2 meter by 4 meter table, and then they could do what they liked. And here I have, this also is the first work which was in a sense sent as a drawing and installed there, and I wasn't present. I sent only the chairs, the earthen bowl, and the leaf rice plates and the chatai. But for the rest of it, it was made there. I'm here again making kind of playful relationship between the high and the low, the kind of tilting of the table. In the center is a bowl which is supposed to be milk. The legs of the table now, in fact, of the chair, sorry, are now on the table like candle bra. The kind of metaphoric shift, in a way, if you can call it, from the table to the table as shelter. And here below, you have 12 people seated. It wasn't intended, but it's nothing to do with the Last Supper. But there could be, in a sense, a kind of thing. And you see the scale of the church here. And I want to end, and I hope I am, in fact, ending almost in the kind of opposite note of Timothy, and going to very briefly indulge myself and take a few minutes of your time as proposing a project, an ambitious project which maybe will never be realized, maybe a bit like the grand ambitious project that Kumar Shani is engaged in on a project on cotton, but this is nowhere on that scale. Its location is the Darbar Hall of the Victoria Memorial in Calcutta, and its working title is Up the Hooghly River, a Historical Retake. The presented commemorating 50 years of India's independence. The project would involve historians, theater people, other people working in video and light. And there are just two basic images which I want to sort of mentally project onto you. For those of you who don't know, the Darbar Hall of the Victoria Memorial is a space, maybe if I would roughly well over around maybe 125 or 150 feet long by about 30 feet wide. It has a ceiling something like 50 feet high, very grand and baroque. There's a rotunda in front of it. It has a doorway roughly about 20 feet wide. I would take a barge, one of those barges that crosses the Hooghly, and bring it and wedge it into the entrance. The viewers will climb up onto this barge and walk along, and the barge would be roughly, whatever, 10 or 12 feet high, and look down onto this space. The space will be dominated by the negative molds of Queen Victoria and all the viceroys in plaster cast, which I would take from the sculptures that are there itself, and those negatives would be scattered on the ground. In those negatives would lie various kinds of, they would become containers, would lie all the histories which historians in this period have been shoring up, whether in the form of documents, information, photographs, which will be represented as slides, as video. And the viewers then will climb down and walk around this history, which is being reenacted. At the end of the space, there will be large quantities of the silt from the river, which will be put at where normally the viceroy would have sat. And this, there will be a water which will continuously flow on this silt, and will have all the moss that the people, I mean, encounter as the river has. And that is the project, and I hope one day it will be realized, just as Kumar Shani's will be. And thank you very much.
Now, I've got two questions to ask. One question, when you talked about the appropriation and the authorship, I'm not very clear what you are saying. That is one question. Second question somehow comes like, as you said, that most of the installations, they disappear because they are not there, and they are there for temporary time. And that is why you need more words to explain that, say, in case of time.
I mean, continuing with that, I mean, one of the problems that kind of troubles me is that, I mean, you almost narrativize this work, which is going to be done in the Victoria Durbar Hall. Now, a lot of work that is, I mean, there, I mean, in fact, probably now we can all visualize the work in a certain way. I mean, that said, if to take the same example as I mean, we probably can't do this with, say, Sayyid's work. If Sayyid says I'm going to paint this, and until that work is there, there is some way we can't visualize it. So this is a problem which is there a lot of work. It is probably me, personally. There's a lot of work that's been done.
Yeah. If it's related in this, okay.
There seems to be a distinction between, say, the middle square works, which are full of marks and full of complexity. And I certainly found them very, very, you know, they, in a sense, they incorporate all your paintings and mark-making history.
Yeah.
And other works, I like the painting, but it doesn't incorporate that. It's something else. It is something that could be done without your actually being there. And that seems a tremendous, I mean, does that seem different or not?
One by one, yes. I'm glad when you brought up the question of appropriation, which I mentioned. But there, I think, is a slight difference between critiquing a notion of authorship and appropriation. And in some way, I am through showing you work for the last 4 years, like shifting the ground, where my own ground, in relationship to aspects of mark making and signature, which Timothy rightly observed, that the riverscape work certainly has very much a reference to a lot of my drawings, which I have been doing for the last two decades, but that it only represents itself in a different manner. Yes, that I am, in a sense, working for myself a space in which this aspect of signature become more and more reduced for the moment. And so, in fact, the kind of expressionist, in quote, mark making on the gateway is actually also graffiti, and graffiti is both personal, particular, but it gets into the area of something which doesn't necessarily imply that there is a personal signature to it. So I think that it's keeping some of those things alive, but bit by bit actually evacuating them in quite a conscious manner, but yet saying that I can deal, you know, with the personal, with the autobiographical, but use different sort of strategies. The whole thing about appropriation, which many of you people who work on it and theorize on it, is very complex. So I have put it as a question, and I have been questioned that, am I appropriating, if I use a craftsperson, I do not have the skills of stone carving, am I appropriating a skill, or am I just asking a stone cutter to help me draw? That's one part of the thing which I think is not such a problem. It's when you use or include in your work, in my work, somebody else's image, like Hoshi Jal in one case, but I have like acted on that image. In some cases, I'm simply just placing the photograph, those seven photographers' photographs for you to look at. So they are original photographs. I am placing Umrao Singh's original photographs. And where is the presence of that author and mine? What is it? Is it a relationship? Is it negotiable? Am I exploiting taking other people's work and presenting it? So I think that there are various kinds of appropriations, and there are exploitative appropriations, but obviously I do not believe that all appropriations are exploitative, that I am not engaged in an exploitative act. I am engaged in a kind of new sort of referentiality, where I am in a sense decentering myself and placing, you know, in the circulation of images, new sets of meanings. About words and descriptions, that is now, I have given you an image of this project in the Victoria Memorial. I think that I obviously entirely disagree with you, because this is yes, certainly an image, and images certainly are powerful in kind of circulating. And I think that it is Duchamp who said that he could throw out an idea, and the idea could have an image, and that image in fact could be circulating for a very long time. As we know, Duchamp is in fact more alive than he ever was. That it is possible to throw up through words or through an act an image, and it remains alive, and it's constantly being questioned, transformed, etc. But you have the image, but you do not have the experience, and that's what I said, is that this this form, the installation form, is so closely related to, or it is foregrounding the body as an active present that walks through that space. And it is only through the walking of it that the final and total meaning will come through. So when Jang Suk stood for a long time in front of that sculpture, so she was there for almost 2 hours, and she finally, for her kind of viewing, evacuated all those dead bodies and all those nails, and she transformed it into a kind of metaphysical delight. Now that was a programmed or art historical intellectual intervention on my part, but I would never even express it in those terms, in the way that she was able to transform that object. And so I think that this kind of work is actually giving so many kinds of entries, so many sort of spaces to so many viewers which are making the work, and hopefully Shiv Kumar, you will walk through that show one day and say that yes, there were many things which when I heard.
I want to know when So sculpture becomes an installation. Does installation mean it's the site specific? Does the site specificity make a sculpture into an installation, or is it that it has to be dismantled and will never appear again, which makes it into an installation, or what is the difference?
Thank you for bringing that up, Meena. I'm a little self-consciously and intentionally using the words installation. I think that because it's just been introduced as part of our discourse here, but I would like to gradually abandon that word and say either sculpture or call it artwork. But then, yes, there is something which is a site-specific installation, and unless over a period of time a new kind of word is given to it, I would say that so far it's only this future idea of mine is truly a site-specific installation, because it is not possible to show it anywhere else. Whereas I can, I'm calling the Shergill archive an installation, and it's moved from Budapest, it's now in Delhi, and it will come to Gallery Kemul. So it that kind of work moves, and so finally it's sculpture or it's an artwork. But the site-specific installation is the kind of project that I've described, which will only last for that period of time that it's there, and because it's so connected with a building, a history, and the whole project works around that, that can never be duplicated anywhere else.
I was listening, which is partly related to what Mr. Kakani said. You've spoken of the field, the place where the artwork is in place. I would like you to elaborate upon how you would project the relationship between the recenters of the place and the field, especially in view of a two-pronged redefinition of authorship that you have submitted by means of appropriation on the one hand, and on the other hand by means of denial, and I'm referring to your work which is shown at the end of the year.
Last word you said of?
By means of denial.
Denial.
You mean self-denial?
I'm referring to a set of works which were shown at the Kemul in December. Where there was a flask of potassium permanganate through which you could create images that in no way exerted authorship in the sense of control.
Yeah. Well, Chaitanya, you have raised in a sense the question of this subjectivity, which is in a sense finding both a way of expressing itself through different kinds of placements and in different kinds of sites, where I hope that subjectivity then gets defined through certain kinds of actions and interventions, and that this field aspect that I'm talking about possibly allows me to move from the kind of personal private into the social and political spaces, so that some definition of the self, of I as the artist, is actually being made in process, but obviously very different from that kind of process that whether it's John Davis on one hand, or the expressionist artist, or the Picassian thing, that you are going on and on, through those kind of gestural activities, that I'm intentionally moving out to redefine myself, but I'm always saying and insisting, and that's what differentiates me from, say, a Damien Hirst, that the Goldsmith example is giving, of that kind of art that just has an idea and it gets manufactured by somebody and it is placed. And Damien Hirst says, That's all. I organize it. It might cost a lot of money to put a shark, you know, in the exhibition hall. But that's it. That's done. I've made my statement. I am constantly saying that there are many levels of spaces, interventions, forms, and that these divides of both subject matter, that if you are politically inclined, you cannot deal with this, the personal or the personal, you know, should shy away from the political. And that in some way saying that there would be very, say, different ways that these are represented, that there is not that style that holds and forms the kind of link or the chain. But I think that both finally the artist as well as the viewer goes back to put these things to together. And so somebody came to my show and said, well, it's so continuous, all your work. And there are the links. And that even if you're talking about breaks and ruptures, every time there's a break, then somebody has to, you know, dam that kind of flow which is flowing in some other direction. And I think that is part of human action. And I'm then putting into this space inside, you know, you as the viewer, Chaitanya, to place yourself and if you wish to locate my continuously made up subjectivity in these very different sorts of interventions.
Would you rule out painting again?
No.
Ivan, can you describe to me when this change happened from painting into installation, and what was your need to do it?
Well, I mean, if you want to specifically, I the series I did on the Gulf War using engine oil in a sense, deframing the painting by what I mentioned about using the map as something which stitched paper, it moved onto the floor. I brought the engine oil, you know, on as a referent of the medium I'd used, and then from there I just kept moving on.
Was there a special need in you to do that?
Obviously there was.
I want to know how it satisfied you to go on.
Well, if you think that it's not satisfying me and I should get back to painting, as some gallery people would like me to do, well, that's another matter. Yeah, Lalit.
Mine is less a question and more a reflection on some of the questions that have come to you about the distinction between sculpture and perhaps painting on the one hand and installation on the other. And a question that I think something... I've been reading something Geeta has written in Delhi in the last week, where she said, why installation art now in India? Why has it happened only recently? And then, you know, seeing how you're talking and the questions coming at you, it seems to me like what it's posing. I'm speaking as someone who is interested in a temporal art cinema,
yeah.
And I'm a real foreigner with the painting and sculpture. Someone has to tell me how to read it, and otherwise I can't. It seems to me what is being foregrounded is temporality, time, in a way that sculpture, neither sculpture nor painting do. And time here is like, what is time? It's not one thing, one conception of time. And when you talk of the body walking through the space, one aspect of the body is its irreversibility, time as absolute decline,
yeah.
Or time as forked. The present moment
time is
as forked, you know, like,
yes.
A hair,
yeah,
that's,
yeah, forked,
split.
Yeah.
Bergson's notion of time, the present, of the present you can say only that it was, of the past that it is.
Yes.
So you're working with memory in a very complex way, it
yes.
seems to me. And it's really interesting that installation about the book, it's not quite an installation, but the Moors, the Moors refusing to leave. There's the board, but it's not going to go.
Yes.
Whereas Raul Ruiz, the Chilean filmmaker, made an installation in France and Spain called Expulsion of the Moors from Spain.
Uh-huh.
And he's a filmmaker and a theatre person who, for the first time, did an installation. And he said it's a very cold form for him. And it seems to me very much about death, mourning, temporality, time as... It's a way to explore time
yes.
in a very complex way.
Thank you.
It's a related question because I wanted to link it with the fact that in connecting these questions also in Timothy's paper with some of French philosophy, we've talked about the cancellation of origins, but to my mind there's something very interesting about disappearances, the imagination of an object which will disappear. And I wanted to just briefly refer to a very lovely article that Derrida did in honor of Levinas once, in which he talked about the fact that, say, a Talmudic text which is spoiled must be buried, or something like a stillbirth, where the child is not going to circulate in the world, but still it is a child that was created. And I wonder, it links up with the earlier question actually, that how much of, if one looks at this whole mode of disappearing, it seems to me that it's a certain kind of also a way of dying and mourning, which I think it connects up with the idea of the floating. I'm not very clear how it connects up, but on hearing you, it seemed to me that that is a very, very interesting point of difference. So the words, even if they are narrativized, they're really not. They're not really textual exegesis in that sense. I mean, these are really words like the Talmudic text words, which must also be ultimately spoiled in the process of time.
Well, I just very briefly mentioned at the end and referred to the aspect of death and installation, and that once, I mean, it is dismantled, then it does enter the area of memory, and the fact that one lives with memory, and that the living with memory, and then the need every now and then to dig it up, I think that finally the artwork always needs to be dug up and re-presented either in the museum or as I said, quoting that very evocative description by Sarkis, that it's a bit like giving somebody else the responsibility. He was responding to the last work of Joseph Beuys, the very famous artist whose show was in London and a German museum in its sort of Germanic fashion installed it in a museum to the, you know, detail of the light plug and every bit of thing. And he said Joseph Beuys would, you know, be ashamed that his work was frozen, picked up. That he's talking about if there is a need to represent, then there is, as he's calling it, the conductor who looks back at the score when they find it, the conductor, curator, museum director, is re-entering the work to represent it to the public 5, 10, or 20 years later. And if some things have, in a sense, been destroyed in the process, then those things are also put together. That, I mean, the renovation of paintings and the way they are changed is such a long history, so that, you know, people are shocked that how can this Michelangelo painting look like this. So paintings even, which otherwise, you know, you think that we are also, even in their physical properties, they change much less. So I think the installation form allows these interpretations, these transformations. Obviously no space can ever be the same, and that openness, that flexibility allows a whole circulation of meanings and audience. Thank you.